Okay, everyone. I'd like to introduce our final speaker of the morning, Dr. Zoen Tu. Zoen is a faculty member in neurology at the Laboratory of Neuroimaging and at UCLA. And it's been a great pleasure working with Zoen in the last few years. He's a truly brilliant person with a training in computer vision. And as we've seen in the first two lectures this morning, we're beginning to see the neuroscience concepts that are of interest for the rest of the summer school. It's now almost as though we're going up into the mountains in terms of difficulty in the mathematics. You'll see a lot of the principles of computer vision are used for segmenting brain structures, automatically finding brain structures in MRI. And so the next three speakers, including Zoen, are all going to cover much more in-depth mathematics of how you would identify automatically salient features of interest. Zoen, just a bit of background on him, has done a tremendous amount of work in the field of image segmentation. He received the David Marr Prize for Computer Vision, very prestigious award for innovative work in the field of computer vision. And it's a great pleasure to have Zoen talking now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul. Yeah. Actually, the two previous talks have given me a very much easier time to go through my slides, but that's the advantage. Disadvantage is actually I'm standing between you and the lunch. Probably everybody is hungry now. So the talk is towards learning-based holistic brain image segmentation. So this is a slide I stole from Paul and Arthur's paper. Actually, the goal is really for the mathematical statistical point of view, given image. I have to confess, I really know very little about the neuroimaging or the biology, all these things. So my task is really to develop a system, an algorithm to perform brain image analysis, imaging analysis, segmentation. So this is pretty much following the computational anatomy Michael Miller and Granada set up to perform general segmentation as cortical, subcortical extraction, then perform various of analysis in terms of disease, growth. So given a general 3D MRI, which is a 3D matrix, the task is to extract this several major cell curves, and also there are a bunch of other cell sites. And also we want to segment the MRI volume into a number of subcortical structures. Probably at this moment we're facing to sub-segment around 100 important structures. So these are the manual determinations by neuroanatomists in order to segment six subcortical structures, putamen, caudate, ventricles. And as we can see, even for human experts, we're not getting consistent segmentations because mostly we only segment the structures in 2D slices. So even they look probably consistent. Probably is down three corner. If they look consistently smooth over here, but if we look at in the 3D direction, they're jagged. So this is a really challenging problem for computers as well for humans because we really don't have good 3D annotation tools. But for challenge for automatic segmentation, so usually we're facing large volume size for high resolution 3D MRI, maybe not even necessary MRI, other modalities. And the very weak intensity patterns, there are large intra-class similarity and inter-class variation among different subcortical structures and cortical structures. And hard to capture a 3D shape information due to high dimensional space and a limited number of training data set. Very often we really strive to get more and more training data. Professor Guido Garrig has done an excellent job getting the infant data and child. Although it was surprising to me, he said that it's not as challenging as we thought, but still it's a lot of work. And hard to capture high level knowledge to adapt to different protocols because different neuroanatomists even have different protocols to extract the different structures. So this is by no means a complete version, but I just roughly summarized the existing work. So in general, there are so-called generative model approaches and discriminant model approaches. the famous Fisher's work using Markov random fields model to perform segmentation is more or less a generative model approach, but there are no explicit shape information involved. And the famous active shape appearance model by Kutze and Taylor, they studied the active appearance and active shape model. And also the MRAP model by Pizer's group and Guido Garry at UNC. And also their recent work on joint shape model and also ALAS based. So because one easiest, most straightforward thing to do to do segmentation is probably to just perform registration, given an ALAS, average ALAS. So there are also so-called classification-based approach. One is so-called knowledge-based driven method. I think this probably started from early work when neural network was popular, and people say, well, why don't we use neural network to combine several features to classify voxels in the brain. And also the recent feature classification, SVM, this type of thing. So let me clarify what is generative model, the difference, the high-level concept, the difference between generative model and discrete model. So generative model is saying we can generate data. So each generative model focuses on in class itself. In a language speaking, we can make a comparison. So suppose we speak Japanese and Italian, and if one can speak Japanese, then that's generative model because we can synthesize and we understand. But if we go out to the street and we hear people talking about Japanese and Italian, we don't have to know, understand what they're talking about. We still can tell the difference, whether this person is speaking Japanese or Italian. So that's the discrete model. So the information captured in generative model is much, I think, richer in the discrete model. But the learning generative model is really hard, especially when we're facing...
So the second model you call the discrete?
Descriptive model.
Descriptive.
Yes.
Descriptive rather than generative.
Rather than generative. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we want to do a discrimination for classification. Okay. So there are cons and pros about the generative model and discrete model, but I don't want to go into details. But that's a general concept. So the take-home message is there are very popular methods in machine learning, computer vision, and medical imaging. People are trying to compare the difference of using generative model and discrete model.
But can't you always, if I have a descriptive model, can I always synthesize from it? I draw from it. That's generation.
Yes. So
what's the distinction?
It's a discriminative, because when we say discriminative,
discriminative.
Yes, discriminative, not descriptive.
Okay.
Yeah, discriminative. So when you can tell the person speaking between Japanese and Italian, that does not mean you can speak Japanese. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. So these are some literature about the work for segmentation. People are using active appearance models and the shape model. So mostly in order to do segmentation, basically if you perform energy minimization, there's appearance model or likelihood model, and there is a shape model. Most appearance models are more or less Gaussian IID assumption, and shape models, some are constraint based, some are PCA, so these are the most general models used over here. I think the literature in the segmentation has, especially in the appearance model, people have assumed very simple models, which are far from being sufficient enough to capture the large variation in the modeling sense. So then, once you have the model, then you want to perform inference. There are a bunch of different algorithms to perform inference, but that's the current general literature we can think of about this doing medical image segmentation, or in a way, computer vision doing general natural image segmentation as well. People using generative model or discriminative model to do this. So in a general Bayesian framework, so now let's define our task. Suppose we're giving a 3D volume. This is one slice. And we want to study the solution, W, which has n number of regions. So if we put this into a Bayesian, and we put the posterior and decompose them into likelihood and the prior, so the likelihood says how likely this W is generating the image. The prior says what is the spatial relationship, context, and also their shape information. But as we can see, these are the plots, histograms for different structures. As we can see, these different structures have large overlap if we only consider the intensity values. This means we cannot easily separate them from just from intensity values. This appearance, this is almost a bit obvious. This also means this kind of likelihood, if we assume just simple IID, they're not sufficient enough to capture the large variation. Then also, we can define the prior, different priors, PCA, the simplest, and MRAP, or whatever, anything you can think of, to put the prior into the shape model. Then we want to put the two things together in a Bayesian framework. That's the general setup. But as we have said, we are facing tremendous challenges. First is to learn a faithful likelihood model. Another one is a faithful shape model, because the 3D shape model lies in really high dimensional space. So far, we don't have a clear solution. So if we want to study this Bayesian framework, and we put this into energy minimization thinking, in a high level of thinking, so there's a so-called modeling and computing. Modeling is we define or learn a model. Computing is to perform energy minimization, perform inference to obtain the best solution. So I think equally they're equally important. But my recent research or focus actually is putting more into the modeling. If we get the model right, probably we don't have to spend much time on the computing part, because our biological vision system at least can perform inference very rapidly. This means probably we have a good model there. Especially when things are not confusing, we can rapidly understand the things. So I'm more thinking to put the energy into the model. If you get the right model, then suppose this is the best solution. If you get the right model, then you start from anywhere. You can do a steep distance and quickly you can get to the right solution. But if we really have a bad model, very bumpy, then if we start from initial solution, very likely we will end up with getting stuck into a local minimum. That's the major problem actually in a lot of the statistics. We put a lot of efforts in computing, and recently in computer vision there are graph cuts and a bunch of recent algorithms. But it seems like less efforts have been put into the modeling. If we have the right model, even if it's approximately good, because all models are wrong, but if they are as good as close as to the ground truth as possible, then we often have a much less time in getting the right solution. So here, this is just one. I quickly go through it for this slide. So now, as we said, if we put it into a Bayesian framework, we decompose the posterior into likelihood and the prior. Because the signals are highly non-ID, and also they are highly correlated. So a Gaussian assumption about the ID model probably is a serious flaw. But on the other hand, it's really hard to learn genuine models of the joint statistics of all the voxels, or for all the voxels within one structure. So one thing what we can do is do a compromise. So instead of studying a generative model over here, we study a discriminative model. So it's like a pseudo likelihood. We put the likelihood given a neighborhood of a voxel over here with the joint distance between the likelihood of its intensity value and also its label belonging to a specific structure. Then we can turn this so-called pseudo likelihood back, then the whole posterior is composed of only two terms, very simple. One is here, it's a discriminative model. Given any neighboring voxel here, so suppose we want to study the probability of how likely this voxel belongs to certain structure. We see image patch here, we say how likely this voxel belongs to a certain structure. But we're no longer using a simple IID assumption, because this probability of this guy being to a specific structure is decided by a large neighborhood with all the neighboring voxels. So that's why this is a discriminative model. So this kind of approximated the energy function towards the degenerative model. The whole posterior actually gives us a lot of more freedom to push the recent machine learning techniques in learning to study this discriminant model by fusing a large number of information. I'll get to that here. So actually the algorithm is very simple. Because we studied the discriminant model here, and we can fuse a large number of features. If you're familiar with the recent progress in machine learning, boosting has been very popular. So boosting has the advantages of selecting features and weighting them and do the summation. Then if it is capable of selecting fusing tens of thousands of features in deciding how likely this guy belongs to a specific structure, which is not directly available over here. That's where we can get an advantage. So now the decision on making how likely this guy belongs to a certain structure is by fusing a very large number of intensity structures, also local shapes, because we can put the local geometric, let's say, a curvature, gradient, all the information, and it's up to learning to decide how likely this voxel belongs to a certain structure. So the algorithm is extremely simple. So in training, we're given a set of annotated volumes. We learn a multi-class classification. This is PBT is done. I did three years ago. It's a paper on ICCV. So it's a variation of boosting to perform hierarchical learning. Then you learn PCA models for each structure. Then the energy function is very simple. This is the discriminative part, and these are the high-level shape information. And the parameters are automatically learned. So in a philosophy of the Bayesian also energy minimization, people have strived to design specific terms in order to put their regularization and also to learn a better model. But here, the learning has the particular advantage, and it's up to learner to decide. Here, what kind of sensible features are from a large pool, millions or even billions of features. Of course, we will. There's a chance that we will fall into overfitting, but since this is voxel-based, we pretty much have a large number of training data set based in terms of each voxel. But although the overfitting is inevitable in the end. So in testing, it's very simple. Compute classification using whatever your favorite model, multi-class classification, and obtain initial segmentation, and you can perform region computation or PD type of thing to get to a result. So again, the focus is to shape up your energy. If you get the right energy function, probably the segmentation is not that hard. So these are the typical features used. So there are around 10,000 features. Of course, you can expand it. These are 3D hard, because 3D hard, you can use different scales, and then after using the integral volume, you can get very quick, efficient computation, because computing these hards is regardless, independent of size when you use integral image. So you can also put the curvatures or different features in, and it's a large candidate feature pool, so it's up to the learner to decide how to fuse them. And also you can put the location information over there. So these are some features. So in this thing, it's very simple now. Suppose this task is to perform hippocampus segmentation. So these are some crop up the 2D slices for the areas around the hippocampus. So the red ones are the manual annotation. So these are the probability maps. The darker, the higher the probability. As we can see, without engaging any specific shape information by performing classification only, we already get roughly correct structures in a probability sense. So this is all the discriminant model. Then you can apply the PCA model or your favorite shape model on top of it to get more global constraints to get better segmentation. So this is a general concept of the so-called hybrid model. But the emphasis actually is still in the discriminative part to fuse a large number of features. Yes?
Let me say something. Are you assuming that the conditional probabilities are location independent, or do they depend on whether you are in the hippocampus somewhere else?
That's a very good question. So if your features are not location dependent, then the segment, the conditional probability is not location dependent. If your features, if you give the segmentation or the feature pool the position information, and these positions are selected by the classifier. Then they depend on locations. So it's up to you to decide. And I try to do both. So if you put the position in, it helps the classifier at the very beginning. So the first set of features are really the position features, because the structures are more or less there if you do a rough registration. But if you don't use them, you still can get similar results, but probably a little bit worse. So it's like the other features are trying to make up the position information. Does this answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's flexible. So these are some results. So these are to segment the six structure subcortical structures. So this is step one, step two, and this after step three, you see we already get pretty accurate results. So these are some results on the test data on different views. These are the manual annotation. These are the you see the problem, actually the results by using the problem map only. As we can see, the structures, if we don't engage global shape information, the structure is almost roughly there, but just it's a little bit jagged. And if you add more specific global constraint, the structures get more regularized, and they can become smoother. So this is a result by free surfer, I guess. We just take this free surfer and run it, then I think if you work a little bit or get more familiar with free surfer, you can get better results using this one. But this is just a comparison. I think the free surfer did a good job of getting the hippocampus over here, but in terms of the overall segmentation, it's not as good as the hybrid model. So then also, the learning helps us to do actually not constrained by specific tasks. We can do south side detection as well. So now your training is just train the system with the south side rather than the subcortical structure. So the algorithm almost follow the same thing. The only difference is in the energy minimization part, you use dynamic programming or SNAKE to extract. But getting the probability are almost identical. So we apply the same thing, but of course, now it's south side that the features selected by the algorithms are different, but the system itself is the same. You just dump the system with different training data set, automatically perform south side detection to extract major south side. So these are different results on the volume and on the surface as well. So you can train this on extract the surface as well to extract these major south side. So far I've talked briefly about this hybrid model. The disadvantage of this thing, rather than advantages, the models only capture the appearance variation in terms of local image paths, and the joint statistics of different structures are not captured. The global shape model, actually, I should confess, didn't help significantly in terms of getting the numbers. It helps by 0 point something, regularize a little bit, but global shape actually didn't help. This means this very rough PCA model is not capturing the global shape information. So next thing I'll present actually is much improved results, which seamlessly combine context and shape information for a complex appearance. So this is a motivation slide. Anybody guess what it is? So people who went to MCHI probably know what it is. Now, how you can tell it's a snake. So this means context give us a lot of information about what the things are, even they're severely crude. So this happens a lot in computer vision and natural image analysis. Not that so in MRI because we don't have occlusion in MRI, but still context gives us a lot of information. If you know the ventricles, the neighboring structures really are important. It can be inferred very much easier. So the same thing here. It's very hard to tell what this is, but if I gradually present you, it's a roof. So you see, this says how important the context tells us. If we just look at the local image patches, or in either 2D or 3D, it's very hard to tell. Although some information is important, for instance, grass is green. These are the some more or less high-level concepts, but how do we really put all the knowledge into a sound mathematical state, the statistical framework, whether the algorithm is still attractive or tractable to do the modeling and the computing. That's the challenge. So as I said, it's very hard to learn a joint statistics of the likelihood and the prior in the modeling. So even we have some assumption in the computing part, computing for optimum solution that maximize the posterior, or if we perform energy minimization, is not an easy task if we have a very bumpy energy functions over there. So we want to have desired algorithm to achieve that. So this is one solution which we call context. So there has been huge success of applying a micro-random fields model, and recently conditional random fields model, CRF model, and also people use various energy minimization, belief propagation, graph cuts, variational method, dynamic programming, all sorts of algorithms to perform energy. But the problem of existing MRF and CRF is they use very fixed topology on a very limited number of neighborhoods connections, usually slow and take many steps to perform message propagation, for one message to propagate from one end to the other. It's not guaranteed from global optimal, although in theory, if you wait 1 million years, you will get convergence. But oftentimes, we cannot wait that long, and the modeling and computing processes are separate. So this is, I apologize, this is, I'm copying some of my figures from the CVPR paper on 2D, but it's actually the same thing. So now suppose we want to perform horse segmentation, let's pretend this is medical imaging. So I'm giving you a bunch of horses, the images from Google, and you can see there are large variation in appearance. And it's really still a mysterious thing for human vision system, biological vision system, to perform object recognition and segmentation. But as we can see, the problem is not easy. So now, instead of studying the whole joint statistics of the posterior, let's say we want to study the statistics of each individual voxel or pixel here. So ideally, in order to tell the probability of this guy belongs to a certain structure or horse, we need to integrate all the rest of the variables, which is even harder than studying the joint statistics. A traditional classification approach can do this. We just crop many image patches and put them into two bags. One bag is a positive, another is a negative. The negative bag has all the patches from the background, and the positive bags have all the images from the positive. We just apply a traditional classification. But it's really hard to tell if we look only at the patches, as we can see. If we look at the patches, for horse head, I think probably it's easy to tell, but for many of the bodies in the background, it's very hard to tell. That's why we're saying, assuming an ID model and a Gaussian model is a very problematic. So this auto-context algorithm is actually surprisingly simple. Now suppose we're giving training image. Now let's pretend we don't have one, and we can do a traditional classification. We can obtain some kind of classification map. As we can see, it's not good at all, because it's very hard to tell from by looking at the local image patches. So what do we do actually a second level of classification? We put the probability map back into the feature pool. Now our classifier can select both appearance features and also the probability map from the previous run. It's like if we're looking at the road scene, there is some rough information about sky, road, and tree. These we can tell immediately, but some detailed structures we don't know. Then instead of putting them into a Bayesian framework in a joint statistic, we say, oh, once we have some of these information, we train another level of classifier. This classifier can classify or select features from both appearance and the confidence map from previous run. So these are the features selected. The red ones are features selected. Then we can see this probability map get much enhanced, because now the messages are not only from the appearance and also from the local neighboring the structures. And this neighborhood can cover the entire image. So the learning capability or the modeling capability goes much beyond the traditional micro-random fields, because if we use click in Markov random fields, you know, because we have to do the integration, we're very much limited by the number of clicks we can have, or connections.
Well, why are you able to avoid that?
Because here we compute the classification, and the classification, this is a deterministic step, it's through a logistic regression, we don't have to do integration. So the probability of next time how likely this pixel belongs to a certain structure is by fusing all the uncertainties, selected uncertainties, by just a logistic regression, just one step. So there's no integration to integrate all these uncertainties. That's the difference. So that's why we can afford to fuse large number of neighboring structures.
Could you say something about the training? So you have vortices that have exactly the same appearance, or can they be rotated?
It can be rotated. It's up to you. So you just dump the system with different training. So there for this data set, there are 200 training data sets. You just these different. So here you use different. How do I go back? So here you use different. It's up to again up to your training. It's up to you to decide. You just dump the system with different different images, and these images have labels. That's it. So in the Caudate segmentation, we follow the identical procedure. So in the training, you have the original MRI image, and you have the manual annotation. So you just train a set of classifiers. You can see in the end, the probability gets much more enhanced by fusing a lot of context information and implicit shape information, and implicit joint statistics of all the neighboring structures. So these are some BWH and UNC data set in the recent Grand Challenge competition for Caudate led by Guido Garrick, UNC. So they set up an excellent test for us to test our train and test our segmentation algorithm. So this is a high level concept of how much improvement we get by using this kind of very simple way of doing the context, which I call auto context. So this is the first level. Solid lines are the test algorithm. The higher the better. This is so-called F value. So the higher the better. We can see this. If you don't use context, just use a simple classification, you get the results like here. So once you have the context, the algorithms immediately boost the results, and it starts to level off. So after six or seven rounds, you're not getting too much improvement by fusing all these context information. So this is the grand challenge UNC group has set up last year to test the Caudate segmentation. So this is a result by the hybrid model on different, these are different cases, I guess. I should shamelessly say that I won the best, the first prize. Although it's not fair because the organizers are not allowed to attend. Actually, they get better results. So these are some numbers by using the hybrid model and also the auto context model. Embarrassingly, last time we got 59 on the offline training, on the offsite test data set. So if you would use auto context model, you can see it improves a lot in terms of the previous hybrid model. And here, the auto context model actually is much simpler than even because we even get rid of the high level shape information without using the PCA model, which Saran just said very ugly. So these are the consistency for test on different. These are child. I think they have single patient scanned 10 or 12 times. Yeah. And then to test the consistency, I think the algorithms get very consistent, consistent as humans. But although the results are not perfect, but very consistent. This means learning is learning the regularity. So these are the comparison on performing 56 brain structures, cortical and subcortical structures. So these are the manual annotation. So these are the results by the first round. So these are by the fourth round. We can see some improvements on the fine structures gradually. And by the way, another advantage of this pro-learning approach is it is not as constrained by the number of structures. You just dump the system with your volume and your manual annotation. At this moment, where you train on 56, but it can be extended. Next step is to easily extend to a segment of 150 or even 200 structures. So these are some tests John Mora did on studying the ANTNI data set. So these are the results, p-value map by FreeSurfer. This is by the previous the classification-based approach. This is by the out-of-context model. So in terms of predicting Alzheimer's disease, John Mora actually did an excellent job to show that the algorithm is even outperforming human experts in predicting on this ANTNI data set. So these are some results. I think a manual annotation and automatic segmentation. This is, I think, around 25 structures to do that. So these are some values that we're still improving in terms of precision and recall. So in theory, I'll probably just skip this part. In theory, the algorithm is guaranteed to converge because every time we're reducing the training error. So in a comparison to belief propagation, if we have a model in belief propagation and we study the single likelihood and study the joint statistic to compare wise kind of potential, then in order to pass a message from two ends to the current one, you need to perform a lot of integration, and these messages are just slowly getting propagated. And this poses a great challenge if we use the traditional MRF-CRMF model, because very often we are forced to use a very limited number of connections, and these connections may not necessarily reflect the underlying statistics of the images or almost any data set that we're facing. And here we provide another perspective to this thing to fuse really a large number of structures, but in a very easy, trainable, and testable way. So our algorithm performed the whole segmentation, I think within 20 minutes to segment of 25 structures, because in the classification or in the learning, we use hierarchical structure. So if we extend the structure, the algorithm to segment 50, 200, or even 200, the time is locked not rather than linear. So the algorithm is really has a lot of promising directions to be extended to many other things, or to segment a large number of structures. So these are the brain parser pipeline, and you put this input file and perform a rough alignment or registration, and then you just perform the segmentation and you get the results. So these are actually some results on the natural images. So I always get the question, actually people said, I took really the advantage of working on the medical imaging, because medical imaging, the structures or objects are more or less there. If we see a hippocampus, if we don't see a hippocampus brain, either his person is alien, already dead, or mutant. But in natural images, we see a bunch of things almost on different locations, although there is some consistency. So then, actually apply almost the identical algorithm on this thing to perform segmentation or labeling and getting the state-of-art algorithm, but this is not relevant to this. But the reason I'm putting this up is saying this is really a general statistical modeling and computing framework applied in many places on this segmenting human pose. So the conclusion is, for advantage, we learn low-level and the context model in an integrated framework, and the context and actually a lot of shape information are implicitly captured. And it's very easy to implement, significantly faster than MCMC, BP, GIP sampler, and generally avoid heavy algorithm design. The learning and computing use almost same procedure and can be applied in many other domains. The advantages is it requires training for different problems. The explicit high-level information is not included. So in the end, we probably still need to engage the explicit high-level information to get a better understanding. But although at this moment we're trying to avoid, and training time may be long, depending upon what kind of problem you're working on, and require all the data labeled. Although we're working on a semi-supervised and unsupervised. But the general take-home message for this talk actually is we should focus more on the modeling part rather than computing to solve the problem. If we have the right model, probably the computing stage is not that difficult. The modeling sense is how do we really capture the underlying statistics, high level, really the complexity of the data and the complexity of the shape, and the shape includes local shape and the global shape. I think this is a challenge. We're just trying to make a small step towards understanding or modeling the joint statistics of this data signal. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks to Zoen for a really terrific talk. Anyone interested in using this approach, because many of us have images that need to be segmented into components, can see a demo on Saturday morning. Zoen's going to be presenting how the software works then. We're also having a little bit of a segmentation bonanza today. After lunch, we'll have Bruce Fischel, who's a very famous developer of a very widely used package for automatic segmentation of the brain, and also Guillermo Shapiro, who's a mathematician involved in the theory of image segmentation, is going to talk as well. So before I talk about lunch, are there any questions for Zoen?
Yes.
I have a question about shape. You mentioned that somehow in the beginning, in the middle, and then either I missed it or it disappeared. There is no explicit shape model or something, because you say you can dump any type of data into your system.
Yes. Yeah.
So either cyclic curves or hippocampi or volumes or horses.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, that's an excellent question. So before the first hybrid model, which appeared in 2008, I think a couple of months ago, PAMI, the TMI, we're trying to engage both discriminant model and shape model. But if you have really different structures, it's really PC model on a shape is really a very rough, of course, level of thinking. So we try to avoid to use, unless there's excellent generic shape model which can capture all the variability of all the structures. Otherwise, in order to make the whole thing really general enough, trying to avoid using explicit shape at the moment and try to push to see how far we can go.
But then how do you bring in scale invariance, so if you have small and big horses? Where in your system, I somehow missed that. So.
Yes, yeah, that's another excellent question. So at this moment, we hope that this kind of, in the training, it captures, you dump the system with different size of thing to capture implicitly the scale. And yes, we were doing another line of shape model to really get rid of the variance in the segmentation, to really to let it capture the invariance. But at this moment, we just want to push, and the scale changes embedded in the training.
Any last questions for Zoen?
Yes.
All right, thanks. Okay. Almost got to lunch. But
can I just ask, very fleetingly, you showed a confusion matrix for this very wide set of images.
Yes.
And I'm something of an anorak about confusion matrices, but it looked as though there were strong asymmetries in that confusion matrix. Do you have any comments to make about it?
This is because in training, the large portion of objects belonging to sky, generic, these things which are easy to segment, but if we go to birds, these things, they're really small. So our prior tends towards the general big regions. That's why they're not symmetric.
All right, thanks to Zoen again.